tax, but I pay that social security tax on her. Oh. Does that get to be a nuisance?
Okay.
Okay.
This is Edris Wise speaking to Joseph Poise on January 31st, 1985 for the National Council of Jewish Women Oral History Project 2.
Go.
This is Edris Wise on January the 31st, 1985 speaking to Joseph Poise for the National Council of Jewish Women Oral History Project 2. Mr. Poise, I would like to ask you today about the time that you spent as a member of the Pittsburgh School Board, Board of Education, which was at what time? What were the dates?
Roughly, in terms of years, it was from 1973 to 1976, Mike, and I had been appointed for a six-year term.
By whom?
By the judges of the Court of Common Pleas. I might explain that for many years it was the judges of the Court of Common Pleas that selected the members of the school board, the thought being that it would take the school board out of politics. As you perhaps know, in many cities, school boards are selected on an appointive rather than an elective basis. Then, it must have been sometime in 1976, Representative Itkin introduced a bill in the state legislature to put the board on an elective basis and to reduce the board from 15 members to 9 members, which is the present arrangement. And so I left the board once it became an elected board, and I had no desire to run for the office.
In what capacity did you serve during your years on the school board?
Well, I of course was a regular member, and towards the latter part of my term, I was chairman of the finance committee of the board.
Were you on the school board during the years that they were trying to integrate the school system?
Yes. In fact, that was one of our perennial problems, that of working out redistricting, and it was a subject with which the board contended very intensively.
What were your feelings about the situation? How did you feel about integration?
Well, I could see, of course, first of all, I should point out that there was a legal mandate to integrate, and so it was obvious that the board had to do its utmost to comply with the requirements of the law. If I remember, the state Human Relations Commission watched our activities with a great deal of interest. I could see the problems that were entailed, and the fact that it readily becomes a rather a controversial matter. In that connection, I might point out that our 15-member board had 5 blacks and 10 white members. I think this tended to cause something of a divided board, which I felt was rather unfortunate.
So it turned out to be black against white member.
Well, not necessarily that the lines would be drawn that sharply, but let us say that the black members had certain sensitivities, and would sometimes tend to vote as a group, but I would not want my remarks to be construed as indicating that white members were necessarily against integration of the schools. The difficulty, of course, is that there are different approaches which can be taken to the to that sort of a problem, and therefore there can be conflicting viewpoints.
Give me an example of what you're speaking about.
Well, you can, for example, take a school which has developed a rather good reputation, and if the problem arises as to having a better mix, if you will, better in the sense of a more integrated mix of blacks and whites, you do tend to stir up certain sensitivities as to bringing say black youngsters in from another area in order to get that greater mix. In fact, parents may take exception to it. In other situations, you have an extremely difficult problem, and I gather some of it still exists, as for example in the case of Westinghouse High School, where if I recall correctly, the student body was almost entirely black, and you were then faced with an almost insurmountable problem there of how you can effect the establishment of a mix between white students and black students at a school such as that. So I would say inevitably the problem, particularly at that stage, was a rather difficult one. But already, in fairness to the person who was the superintendent at that time, namely Dr. Olson, the concept of using so-called magnet schools was beginning to at least be considered.
Do you feel that the conflict was resolved properly?
Of course, a great deal has been done since I was on the board, and therefore I'm in a rather poor position to pass judgment. From what I read, I gather that the magnet school concept has taken hold, and I have heard, and this is purely what the lawyer would call hearsay, that those schools are serving a very good purpose. I'm in no position, however, at this time, to pass judgment on how well a total problem of integration has been dealt with.
What were some of the other issues that you dealt with? For instance, what can you remember was the most intriguing?
Well, I was very much interested in the problem of discipline within the schools, because it seemed to me that the quality of discipline had a profound effect upon the quality of the instruction, or the quality of the experience which youngsters were getting out of the school system. Board members were afforded a good opportunity to get some first-hand insights into disciplinary problems, because we would serve as what you might call hearing officers to hear instances where students were being heard in connection with alleged violations of disciplinary standards. I became increasingly concerned about the problem, and as a board member did express concern from time to time as to whether we were really being informed as to the extent of the disciplinary situation in the schools. In other words, I was not satisfied, and other board members did share my concern. I was not satisfied that we were kept completely apprised as to the extent to which we had some difficult disciplinary problems in the school system.
Are you speaking of teachers paddling students or students being hostile toward the teachers?
Well, the problem has those two aspects. I was thinking particularly of instances in which students had either been guilty of let's call it violence to other students, or perhaps that it had even in some extreme cases assaulted teachers. That would, now referring to your question as to paddling students, this was an issue that came up before the board from time to time, and one on which the board definitely was split. Again, I'm referring here to whether or not the board would sanction teachers using some form of corporal punishment, and as you use the term paddling, of using such measures with respect to students.
How do you feel about paddling? Do you think a teacher should be permitted to paddle a student?
Well,
if
I recall the position I took, and it probably sounds extreme or sadistic to you, I voted with the group that favored giving not the teacher, but giving either the assistant principal or the principal the right to use paddling for obviously not in connection with older students, but for younger students. This may seem a rather strange position for me to take, but I had become so concerned about the extent of the disciplinary situation and the seriousness of it that I was sympathetic to having, let us say, a more demanding requirement with respect to students insofar as their conduct was concerned. The observations that I had made and the evidence I heard in hearing these cases distressed me that I felt that perhaps some mild form of corporal punishment might be indicated in particular cases.
Who do you think was to blame for the student's actions?
I suppose one would have to say maybe it was the temper of the times, the general attitude. Perhaps it was also a reflection of the situation in the home, and the general pattern of some unrest insofar as a certain segment of the student body was concerned.
What kind of an attitude you're speaking of, the general attitude of the time?
Well, I'm thinking of a certain permissiveness, and I might say, even as a lawyer, I was distressed over the fact that that in the school system, following the edict of the United States Supreme Court, we had to hold, you know, what seemed to me almost a quasi or semi-judicial hearing in instances where more than a nominal suspension of the student was concerned. Another factor that always concerned me, especially when I heard difficult cases of poor discipline, was that there was little we could do about the individual student who might be an extreme violator of discipline, but whom we had to retain in the school system. I do recall very definitely discussing with the then school solicitor, Justin Johnson, whether there was anything we could do to get the student out of the school system. I'm thinking particularly the older student.
You weren't allowed to suspend them?
Well, yes, I would recommend as a hearing officer that the youngster be suspended. But then the question came up as to whether that was, in some instances, very much of a punishment. I sometimes had the feeling that the student welcomed suspension, since he or she didn't want to go to school anyhow, and I was somewhat dubious as to what we were accomplishing. Moreover, in extreme cases,
did you feel there was another way of handling a student like that?
Well, I had wondered whether in some instances we should have taken, and I suppose it might have been done in extreme cases, whether the youngster should have been taken into the juvenile court, or whether there should have been a separate facility for youngsters who presented difficult behavioral problems. In other words, I was never satisfied that, except in the case of a student who had some seriousness of purpose, or where we had very strong backing on the part of the parent, I was not satisfied that the suspension cured the problem. Because I think we must realize that when we say disciplinary problems, we're not dealing with, say, situations such in my day where, as a student in the public schools, where generally a disciplinary problem meant some sort of relatively minor infraction of the rules. But we're talking in situations where that represent cases of outright, if you will, challenge to the teacher, and in many cases did represent rather serious situations, and some almost bordering, I might say, acts which could be regarded
as
violating the
law. Stabbing, hitting?
Yes, I vividly recall, and perhaps it is one of the cases that one of the two or three cases that very definitely impressed itself upon my mind. I literally recall when I was hearing the case involving a youngster, she might have been 11 or 12, who had hit the teacher in the face. And I had him following the procedure, go through all the formalities of informing the mother who was accompanying her that, of course, they were entitled to a full hearing, that then I would be making a recommendation to the board, but then they had appellate devices if they disagreed with the action which the board took. In the midst of my explanation, and I might explain the teacher involved was present, in the midst of my explanation, I heard somebody crying. And I was amazed when I looked to see who was crying, to find it was not the youngster, it was the teacher. And the youngster just had a smirk on her face. And I thought to myself, well, all right, if I do suspend her, or if I do, I should say, recommend suspension for 10 days, 15 days, just how much of an impact was it going to make? I recall another instance which occurred in, let's say, one of our better high schools, where a young man who had been gathering funds for one of the UN causes was, under the legal definition, was robbed by a fellow student. In other words, the fellow student used physical force to take money from this student, and it was a rather substantial sum of money. And as I pointed out to him, in hearing the case, I said, in essence, you committed a felonious offense. You committed robbery because you used force to take the money from this from other students, and to me it represented a very, very serious situation. But can you just stop for a moment, because I do want to ask you.
Yes.
This is going to be somewhat confidential, because I'm going to say something which is there. Will it be treated as
absolutely?
All right. All
nothing
right.
Has
okay.
Absolutely.
All right. So all good.
Where are we doing with time? Are we okay?
We're fine.
I found that when this one student had taken this money, that he had shared it with one of the security guards. And of course, I had no authority with respect to the security guard, but subsequently asked the school solicitor whether we had reported the case to the district attorney, so that the individual, I'm referring to the guard, could be prosecuted. On the grounds of being an accessory to robbery. I found that the action they took had been merely that of dismissing the guard, and I was frankly outraged by the approach. As to the student, I did have an instance where, of course, the mother was very concerned about it. The school involved had a principal who was, seemed to me, a very effective individual, And on that, on the basis of that, as I recall, I was willing to go along. I think it was a suspension for a certain period, because I did have the feeling that perhaps with the mother being so deeply involved, and with a principal who had proven to be very effective, that. We could resolve it reasonably well so far as the student was concerned. But the very fact that the incident occurred indicated to me that somehow the standards which we had impressed upon youngsters, that those standards were not very well observed. And it was a type of incident which it seemed to me was outrageous, and reflected a general situation which certainly we in the board had to deal with. And that is why, as a board member, and as I indicated before, I did get the support, I think, of perhaps almost the entire board, insisted that the board itself be informed of disciplinary cases, not just when we were hearing specific instances, but that the general situation be brought to our attention as particular incidents develop. In other words, speaking very candidly, I had the impression that there tended to be something of a cover-up with respect to the disciplinary situation, insofar as the board being fully aware of what was going on in the schools.
Who selects people like security guards?
The board retains them.
So that you're responsible for hiring them?
Exactly. Right. It would be, yes, the superintendent and the staff, of course. Well, now, I say board, I use the board very loosely.
Who were the other members of the school board when you were serving?
Let's see, well, because I saw her name today, but I would have remembered her. Mrs. Miscamara, who's still on the board. I don't think Mrs. Fink had come on the board. She's on the board right now. But I'm trying to recall. Let's see, Brownlee is off the board. He was on it.
Do you remember their first names?
Well, it was Helen Miscamara. And Mr. Brownlee, who was then served on an elected basis, David Brownlee, and it was then, I think, replaced by the electorate by Grinberg, was on the board. Edison Montgomery, who was from the University of Pittsburgh, was on. A chap named Schatz, I forget how you spell it, is it with S-C-H-A-T-Z?
That's okay. We're almost finished with this tape anyways.
Okay.
We'll just turn it over.
Okay.
I'll go fast forward.